On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Very good afternoon, Namibia, and happy Friday. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are tuned into On The Radar News Bulletin, where we start your day with energy, insight, and real conversations that matter most. Now, today is the 2nd of May. We are just on the second day of this 5th month of 2025, and the time is 4 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. Now, the weekend is calling, but before we slide into relaxation mode, let's take a moment to check in, catch up, and reflect on the stories shaping our communities. That's from the bustling streets of Katatura to the busy shores of Swakopmund, or perhaps you're finding yourselves in Roodred this weekend. Whether you're tuning in from your office or on the road or winding down after a long week, the space is just for you. Now today we are diving into the latest headlines, spotlighting community voices and exploring the stories behind the stories. And as always, we want to hear from you. Call in on studio, that is on 083-288-401, and share your thoughts, opinions, and insights right here on the Radar this Friday. Now you're listening, tune in to On the Radar, when Namibia meets the mic. Starting off with our news item this afternoon. The National Union of Namibian Workers organized the Workers' Day commemoration held under the theme Workers Demand Justice Through Natural Resources, Beneficiation, Value Addition, Living Wages, and Youth Employment. Now, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah delivered the keynote address at the event held yesterday in Oshakati. In her address, Netumbo stated, "As we celebrate Workers' Day today, allow me to pay homage to Namibian workers across generations for their unwavering commitment to building a continually evolving economy, one that is more robust and resilient, with a strong social framework ensuring the well-being of our people." She also commended and saluted essential workers, including men and women in uniform, teachers and nurses, who continue to serve selflessly during adversities and challenging conditions such as drought, floods and disease outbreaks. Now, whether delivering healthcare, ensuring public safety, educating, or providing emergency relief, their bravery embodies the true spirit of loyalty and national service. Netumbo emphasized that Namibia is blessed with abundant renewable and non-renewable resources, which must be harnessed through value addition for the benefit of all citizens. Key sectors such as mining, energy, oil and gas, tourism and fisheries serve as a major economic engine with the potential to unlock employment opportunities for many Namibians. She, however, stated that this potential remains out of reach if the country continues to export raw materials without processing them. The scenario represents compelling opportunities for local entrepreneurs to invest in the manufacturing sector and emerging industries such as sports and the creative economy. The president further noted that while Namibia welcomes direct foreign investment, there must be deliberate programs aimed at strengthening local businesses and entrepreneurs. Investing in homegrown initiatives not only enhances the value of our resources, but also transforms and grows the economy, creates wealth, empowers communities, generates sustainable jobs, and accelerates development. Although this transformation will take time, Namibia must rise beyond being a mere supplier of raw materials and strive to become an exporter of semi-processed and fully finished products, our president said. Now, she further noted that our small population should not be a deterrent. With the right mindset and altitude, she says, we can position ourselves as a center for the production of goods and materials derived from our natural resources. Let's now hear directly from what President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah had to say herself.
All over the world, workers are the backbone of the economy, and Namibia is not an exception. Therefore, a day like this is a day in which both the workers the general public, and the employers have to reflect and agree on the way forward to ensure that all stakeholders in our economy, they play their role effectively and efficiently. Allow me, therefore, to sincerely thank the National Union of Namibian Workers for having organized this day and for the invitation sent to me to be part of this important day in our country. The celebration of the Workers' Day in Oshana in itself has also a meaning, as it's a region that has also produced some of the dedicated workers in our country. We therefore thank the citizens of Oshana for having agreed to be the host of this year's celebration. Regardless the situation in they found themselves as characterized by the flood, I can say this with confidence because it was on the 19th April when I visited the northern regions in order to assess the impact of the flood among our people. I have to thank the leadership of the regions, namely Omsati, Oshana, Ohangwena, Oshikoto, and Kunene, who were terribly affected by the flood, but they managed to put it under control. Thank you very much for the good work. I welcome with appreciation this year's theme, namely, Workers Demand Justice Through Natural Resources Beneficiation, Value Addition, Living Wage, and Youth Employment. Namibia is indeed blessed with abundant renewable and non-renewable resources, which we must seize through value addition for the benefit of our people. Sectors such as mining, energy, oil and gas, tourism and fisheries are the key economic engine with the potential to unlock employment opportunity for the Namibians. However, this potential remains far-fetched if we continue to export raw materials without processing them. This presents a compelling opportunity for local business people, local investors to invest in the manufacturing sector and the emerging industries such as sports and creative industry, which are also potential for job creation. While calling for foreign direct investment in our country, as a government, we have to have deliberate programs aimed at strengthening the local business people and local entrepreneurs. We have to invest in homegrown initiative that does not only enhance the value addition of our resources, but also transform and grow our economy, create wealth, empower our community, and sustainable jobs and development. Director of Ceremonies, although it will come without time, Namibia must rise beyond being a mere supplier of raw material and to export semi-processed up to fully finished product. Our small population should not discourage us. I know it has been used by some people, whether it's deliberate or not, to make Namibians believe that because our population is small, we cannot develop industry. We are part of the global village. And when we are planning our industrialization, we are not only doing it looking at ourselves, we are doing it looking at the world. We are currently part and parcel of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area that allows African countries to trade among themselves. So therefore, Namibia, we must be bold enough, we must be courageous enough for us to contribute to the African basket of goods and the services that can be traded within the continent and beyond. From the outgoing, the government stands ready to venture into public-private partnership and to provide a conducive environment that promotes investment and industry for us to realize our short, medium, long-term and long-term goals. Private-public partnership is very important in development. We have already a policy, but through review, which we have set ourselves, we have come to realize that the policy is so cumbersome to the point that programs that are designated for public-private partnership are being frustrated when it can take up to 2 years before the whole process starts. The Office of the Prime Minister, working together with the Minister of Justice and the Minister of Industries, they now have a responsibility as a matter of urgency to review these policies in order to shorten the process of establishing public-private partnership to enable it to contribute to the economic development of our country. And to respond to these programs as designed. Integrated learning, offering exposure and experience necessary for employment. The government of the Republic of Namibia is ready to work with the whole nation for us to make sure that the labor movement in our country strengthens and to ensure that it's increased by reducing our unemployment rate. I therefore call the private sector to come on board and to respond to these programs as designed. Director of Ceremonies, fellow Namibians, the protection of workers is a fundamental right enshrined in the Namibian Constitution. Nevertheless, social justice continue in some quarters to confront this sector. Against this background, I have decided to merge the function of justice and labor relations in order to ensure social protection for our workers, which is aimed at promoting effective coordination and implementation of labor legislation. I know upon my announcement, there was misgivings as if I care less about labor matters, as if I care less about workers. I said at my victory rally that I'm going to take some decisions that might not be popular, that might offend some people, but I must tell you, I'll never take a decision which is to offend any people, which is against the Namibian people, but all decisions I'll take is because I love Namibians. And this is one of the decisions. The Minister of Justice must make sure that social justice prevail in the labor market in this country. There must be harmonious relationship in the labor market, as it is the backbone of our economy. If labor relations collapse, the economy will collapse. So we must understand it, fellow Namibians, from that context. Director of Ceremonies.
You are tuned into On the Radio News Bulletin. We now pause here and take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back soon with yet more news coming up. Our studio line is open. That is 083-288-401 to come in and share your opinions and contributions with us right here on the News Bulletin.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Welcome back. The 18th edition of the Crayfish Festival officially opened yesterday in the coastal town of Roodrit, drawing crowds from across the country to celebrate one of Namibia's most anticipated regional events. Now, known for its unique blend of culinary excellence, cultural expression, and entrepreneurial spirit, the festival has grown into a vital platform for local economic and social development. In a keynote address at the opening ceremony, Deputy Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, Ruthi Masake, highlighted the significance of the festival as more than just a celebration of seafood. She described it as a testament to what Namibian communities can achieve when given the tools, support and recognition they deserve. The Crayfish Festival is not only about showcasing our world-class cuisine, Masake said, but also about bringing to the forefront the vibrancy of our small businesses, the creativity of our entrepreneurs, and the potential of our youth. She commended the strong presence of corporate exhibitors and small and medium-sized enterprises, noting that the variety and innovation on display reflected the determination and the talent of Namibians across various sectors. From locally sourced food and handcrafted goods or to technology products and services, the festival exhibits provide a snapshot of the country's growing entrepreneurial landscape. Masake further stressed that the events like the Crayfish Festival are vital for regional economic development, particularly in smaller towns like Roodridge, which rely on tourism, fishing and local enterprise. These platforms serve as a springboard for small businesses to gain visibility, build networks and attract investment, she said. The festival, which runs throughout the weekend, features live entertainment, cultural performances, food stalls and family activities, all centered around the celebrated local delicacy, Namibian crayfish. It is not only a feast for the senses, but also a celebration of identity, resilience and collective progress.
It is with great pleasure and humility that I stand before you today, not only as the Deputy Minister for Agriculture, Fishery, Water and Land Reform, but as a fellow citizen, diplomatories in our hearts and across all sectors that sustains our livelihoods. This celebration is as much about our rich marine heritage as it is about honoring and dedicating skill and resilience of Namibia's workforce. The Crayfish Festival is a reflection of what our communities can achieve when supported and empowered. It brings together not just the best of our our resources, but the energy of all small businesses, enterprises, and the youth, which is the co-custodian in all aspects. Whereas I'm happy, though I'm seeing a small number of the youth present today, I would hope to see more youth today while we witness this special festival. The initiatives by both cooperative entities and small and medium-sized enterprises, the SMEs, illustrate the innovations and drives of our people on the Workers' Day. We reaffirm our commitment by making the crayfish available at minimum of $35. $35 million dollars is more money than any person can get and then exercise the right into the market, as compared to the usual of 150, which was a huge amount. Our people, for this, thank you very much. This act of economic inclusivity honors the dignity of every person and makes our ocean treasures accessible to all Namibians. This is a true celebration of our people as Namibian appreciation to Roodridge's Crayfish Festival Board I say sometimes the time can overlay, isn't it? The accent, the management team and all the organizing work. Your vision and effort not only enrich this festival, but contribute meaningfully to our national development goals, especially in advancing equitable growth and sustainable livelihood. We also warmly welcome our friends from the Northern, led by Mr. Gombane Mabele, from the Office of the Primer. The partnership between Taras Region and the Northern Cape is a shining example of the regional collaboration, one that would hold and promise from shared progress and prosperity. As we enter the weekend, let us remember to all the dignitaries present here, member of the parliament, though I've not seen you, wherever you are, local and regional leaders, esteemed visitors, and most importantly, the workers of Roodridge and Namibia at large, I salute you. I salute you for all the effort you have put in the Namibian workforce or government. Let us unite in celebrating in purpose and in our shared dream of better, more inclusive for future. Thank you, and may this year Ludwig's Crayfish Festival be a joyful and meaningful success of all Namibian and all our twin partnership.
And there you had it. With that being said, we take a trip to the marketplace. When we're back, we'll be bringing you yet more news. Stay with us.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should we do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. The Kavango East Police this Friday is set to officially launch a new crime operation aimed at boosting safety and protecting the communities. Now, as part of this operation, the police will increase patrols in neighborhoods, towns, and rural areas to ensure a strong presence. Roadblocks and stop and search activities will be carried out to prevent illegal items from circulating. Special crime prevention teams will focus on tackling house break-ins, theft, drug abuse, and violence. The police will also visit different residence bars and community centers to raise awareness about crime prevention. Now, according to Region's Commander, Commissioner Andreas Haingura, they are calling on the public to cooperate, report suspicious activities, and join hands in making Kavango East a safer place for everyone.
That we are here and our doing is not enough. So as a management, we decided that for 2 months we are going to do weekend operation, targeting crime prevention in Rundu, particularly in Rundu. When I talk about Rundu, I'm talking about Sawema, Ndama, Rundu itself, Kehemu, Kaisos, and Tuingire. Crime is on the increase, colleagues. People are losing their cell phones, their money, even lives. They are losing their life. But then the question they ask is, where is the police? And we are here. Is it not so?
Yes.
Our duty is to prevent crime. So for this weekend, our aim is to go and prevent crime. Robust, aggressive crime prevention operation. Where we don't leave any stone unturned. We do stop and search, whether it's cars, whether it's people. I want knives, I want bangers. Drunk and driving, those who are drinking and drunk, those who are moving in the street, no purpose, and those we can also engage public community at the same time that they also have a responsibility. Every person has a responsibility, all of us.
We are together.
That is good. No people to cry again and say, my cell phone is taken, my wallet is taken, I'm stabbed. All of those. Let's bring order back to Kavango East. And I believe we can do it. Because we are here, we have the mandate, we have the legal instrument, so we can bring order to Kavango East, particularly in Rundu and the surrounding suburbs. So tonight as we go there, We go there as professionals. We don't argue with people. Let the law speak. We implement laws. We talk to people in a decent and polite manner. We don't push people, but we tell them what is expected from them. Those who are selling illegal, let's close them up. Let's make sure they close. Let's make sure that people go home early as they're supposed to be. And then we can concentrate on those who have licenses that go and operate up to 2 o'clock. That is our mandate. Community are complaining. Community have concerns that they are not safe. Rundu become lawlessness. But for tonight, I believe it's an end. We can no longer tolerate that. These young people can no longer terrorize our community while we are still here. So let's go there and do our job. 7 o'clock sharp, we start. We go and we patrol. We make sure we divide ourselves. We target all the hotspots we know. Wimpy, the other hotspot, the Yunnan Road. So all those hotspots, we target them and we make sure that we suppress crime. In short, I thank you.
And there you had it from Regional Commander Commissioner Andreas Haingara. Now let's engage Eagle FM's reporter Anakleta Haikara, who was also at the launch. Good afternoon, Anakleta.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, good. We understand that the Kavango East Police Office officially launched the crime prevention aimed at boosting safety and protection in the community of Kavango East region. How has this been going? Is it a successful one? Are the public and the community cooperating, or just how exactly has it been going?
So far, this is the first one for this season or for this year.
Yeah.
And for a start up yesterday, it went really well, because now people are getting to know what is really happening in town. This is a crime prevention operation, and police need to see people going to bed safely, feeling safe in their own town. So for the operation that was conducted yesterday, so far it was really, really well, because the police also came to an operating period to say they went from bar to bar, they did different searches, and also at the same time, there were people that were advised that were having their cell phones in the dark, and they were advised that, you know, once you have a cell phone at a certain specific area, you allow a thief or criminals to come to you and approach you in a different form, and then they can grab it from you. So it's better when you are at a certain area and you know you are alone, you put your cell phone in your bag or in your pocket to avoid criminals to come to you.
Exactly. And also when the flashlight is actually on, they have a point, it allows the criminals to come and attack
them.
So I understand that this operation is meant to go on until June, or is it July?
It's until June.
It's until June.
And
So far last night, as they were doing the operation, because it's been carried out throughout the day and the night, is that correct?
Yeah, it started off from 6 o'clock up to 2 o'clock in the morning.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And what sort of criminals were they able to curb down just last night alone?
Last night, it wasn't so much of a criminal that were caught, but then there were two men that were caught in act. These two were actually walking around with illicit goods, and also at the same time they were drinking in public. You understand, as they were walking in the road, they had their ciders in their hand, which we are not even allowed to do. So, and then they were apprehended, and they were told that they were going to spend their night in jail, and then they will be this morning. And then also the other thing was of drinking and driving. Many that were caught while in the influence of alcohol were taken in to be you know, to be interrogated and also see if when they blow to see how much is the milli that they have now consumed. And so far there wasn't a lot of arrests made. There were just two men that were taken, the drugs that were also taken in, and they were eventually this morning. But we see as the day goes today how many will be arrested, and then I can still give you an update for that.
Indeed. Now, Anakleta, what actually prompted the Kavango East police officers to come up with this operation to go about street by street just to make sure that streets are clean? What actually prompted that?
As you know, there have been a lot of criminal activities that has been reported lately. These activities are from robbery, people stealing cell phones, and also at the same time, there have been rape incidents from various community members who are perhaps living in the remote areas, or also at the same time, rural areas or informal settlements. And these people are not safe at all, and there have been numerous reports throughout the region. So now the regional commissioner decided that police are there to increase patrol in the neighborhoods, not only in towns but also in rural areas, so that they can ensure a strong presence and also keep on small roadblocks to see are these people driving safely or they are using alcohol before they get into their car. So, and also a lot of things are happening in daily basis where people are using drugs, abuse, people are breaking into other people's houses, and they are very violent with their co-partners or perhaps couples. So now police are there to see to it that this doesn't happen in community, and they need to put a center where they can raise awareness about prevention.
Indeed. Now, so on Facebook engagement, as this news is up on our Eagle FM Facebook page, people actually applauding the Kavango East police officers in doing this. Is this something that perhaps we can roll over to other regions, especially, I mean, we're talking about the capital city where crime is the order of the day?
Yes, indeed. You know, the city is way too big, and Rundu is just a small town, and we are not used to big crimes. You understand? Like yesterday, there's a certain crime that happened. A filling station was robbed. For us,
the one for Kehemu.
Yeah, Kehemu. That is something new. And even if you look at the robbers, they just tore condoms, chocolate, sweet cigarettes, and biltong, and an amount of 8,000, which is different in Windhoek, because they will be stealing money worth 200,000 or more than that.
Exactly.
And also, and also to see a small town as Rundu just coming up with these things, we are really not used of crime. So now the police avoiding that. They do not want to be a place where there's more crimes happening. They want to avoid that. But as a journalist, to put it up there to our social media platform is for them to see that Rundu is not a ground where you can go and commit your crime.
Indeed. And Rundu leading by example, I sure hope that police officers in other regions, especially where crime is really more prevalent in other regions, we're talking about Commerce region and other regions, of course, that they would lead by, as Rundu is leading by example, that they would actually follow in their footsteps.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Anakleta, for always updating us on what is happening around the, and of course, all around the borders of Namibia.
You're most welcome.
Okay. And there you had it from our reporter Anakleta Haikera. Now, with that being said, let's pause here and take a trip to the marketplace, but we still have yet more news coming your way. Remember, you can also be part of the news, that is by dialing in our studio on 083-288-401.
Mukungu elewa tuko maikuto wa mina apiri kwa mavucha aziva. Uvele kusema app ato kasi nchavu kamso, zakare liferile, mwise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba lifera zari vuka kuya kwa lifasi na lifera fama kepe. Mvone maikuto amancha a inga app, mwikute kulivusie mba santo ye nyetuna. Mwikwale sifera fama kepe, marizo hola mina. Hamuvone. Imba encha, niye encha farizwe, ikopnye nifuta ya lifera matasa ep ilini, kukopanya naha, nikuhasa nyari zira mlimu. Zeni, zefu mani hamasfera sesfa ep ya imba, ze tatama Elsin, Ehangano, Oshiherero, Omaemriro, Catholic, Simani Kakarunga, Africans, mizenu zenata. Mululi zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisfera sa kilekea mina, si eke zuefa mkoloko walifera za imba, va 081-2358-063. Kapa mlumere imi.
Onkundana ombanawa kani hauto. Owapumba oshimaliwa mendele lo, dele ouna oshendito. Ouna anironga ya pumbwa okufutua. Ashike mboka ina onjodoe, otaende kashona. Gero onkaramunyo te inyengana. Otukesh, otei ningi, ompu. Tu etena o hauto e, etokuwa e presenda mirongo lenantano, dongushu yoshi endito shoe. Mure ashike, unintetiro mirongo lenantano. Inopungwa oka prislep, nenge o statement ayombanga. O hauto yoye ashike. Mona omula, oshimaruwa, ethimbo weshipumba.
Easy money.
Tudengera nena, ko, nora hamano ime, ne nora nora, hamano, heari hamano, ano, ko, nora hamano yume, ne nora nora, hamano, heari hamano. O shipulera, ko, otokesh.
Welcome back, and now we take you to other news. Hilka Park residents stage a peaceful demonstration over poor housing conditions this morning. And that was held in Kavango East, where they submitted a petition highlighting their grievances. The petition was handed over to representatives from their developer, Armstrong Bank Windhoek, the town council, and the governor's office. The residents voiced concerns over substandard housing, incomplete infrastructure, non-functional utilities, and de facto reports that have been repeatedly ignored. Now let's hear from their spokesperson, Franz Kanjilu, who had this to say.
Faulty electrical wiring, and we also receive incomplete infrastructure with no proper roads, drainage or sewage systems, non-functional utilities, frequent sewage backups, unreliable electricity connections, and they have ignored defect reports, meaning numerous repair requests dating back to 2019 remain unresolved. Demining the area. Given the fact that Hilka Park was an area which was used by the military, we suspect that this area was not properly and well checked, because we recently discovered an old and unexploded bomb. Armstrong Properties and other developers evade responsibility by coercing homeowners into signing petty letters limiting warranties to a mere 90 days. For instance, if a house is bought during the dry season, defects such as roof leaks often become apparent only during the rainy season, by which that time the warranty has expired. This practice, shockingly permitted by the town council, constitutes administrative injustice. Number two, the negligence by town council, Rundu Town Council. Rundu Town Council's mission is to provide affordable, sustainable municipal services through sound governance and effective management, in pursuit of becoming a city of diverse opportunities and socio-economic excellence. However, the action of town council contradicts their mission and vision. How can Rundu become a city when through our inquiries, Armstrong Properties, they said they've handed over Hilka Park to Rundu Town Council, and when we go to Rundu Town Council, they say Armstrong has not handed over anything to Rundu Town Council. We must get around the table, for we need accurate answers. You continue providing development plans from profit-driven developers with no regard to quality or sustainability. You approve settlement with poorly constructed gravel roads and no drainage systems, despite the obvious necessity for proper water channels. You allow and continue to allow to construct substandard construction in areas such as Hilka Park, Sunshine, Mass Housing, Chinga Valley, and other developments. Houses are poorly built, poorly electrified, street lights are inadequately maintained, and sewage systems are substandard. Residents trust the town council to ensure affordable and sustainable developments, yet this trust has been betrayed. We are compelled to ask, do you genuinely assess this development project before approval? Or are the corrupt practices such as bribes influencing your decision? Yes. In your 2024 annual report, you urge self-introspection among leaders. We therefore ask, do you possess the character and competence to drive development in Rundu? You quoted Proverbs 13 verse 4, which says laziness leads to a sagging roof. Idleness leads to a leaky house. The current state of our housing and municipal services is a direct reflection of your laziness and your idleness. In short, you have failed to enforce building regulation and inspection construction quality, oversee developers' contractual obligation, respond effectively to formal complaints, protect residents from fraudulent housing schemes. The complicity of financial institutions. Dear madams, this is yours. Commercial banks have played a role in this crisis by approving and providing mortgages for uninspected and substandard property. Yes. Continuing to finance Armstrong Properties despite evidence of repeated violation is a crime. Our demands from Armstrong Properties. We demand immediate repair of all contractual defects by 30 June 2020.
And you are listening to the voice of spokesperson Franz Kanjilu, who's speaking on behalf of the Hilka Park residents as they staged a peaceful demonstration over poor housing conditions in Kavango East. Now, let's pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. But when we do return, we'll be what's making headlines in regards to economic indicators. So stay tuned.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Welcome back, and now we take you to what's making headlines today in regards to economic indicators. Now, on agricultural commodities, the top commodity losers are oat at minus 2.74%, wool coming in at minus 1.79%, and rice at negative 1.08%. Gains are led by orange juice at 1.89%, with coffee at 1.62%, and soybeans at 0.51%. On metal commodities, the top commodity gainers are copper at 1.39% and gold at 0.69%, On energy commodities, the top commodity gainers are natural gas, UK GBP at 3.18%, with natural gas EU Dutch at 2.90% and heating oil at 0.63%, with the biggest losers being natural gas at minus 1.59%, crude oil WTI at minus 0.15%, and Brent crude oil at minus 0.05%. Nigeria's private sector activity sustains growth. Now, the Stanbic IBTC Bank of Nigeria urged lower to 54.2 in April 2025 from over 1 year high of 54.3 in the previous month. Now, still, this marked the fifth consecutive month of expansion in the private sector as output growth remained robust, now posting its strongest performance since January 2024. Moreover, employment levels rose for the fifth month in a row, reaching an eight-month high as firms responded to increased workloads and made efforts to meet demand. However, backlogs of work continue to grow, even as companies ramped by hiring and purchasing activity. On the inflation front, input costs surged due to rising raw material prices and currency depreciation. South Africa factory activity falls for the sixth month. Now, the seasonal adjusted Absa Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, for South Africa dropped to 44.7 in April 2025. That is from 48.7 in March. That is indicating the sixth consecutive month of contraction in the country's factory activity and sharp overall. Survey respondents cited global trade tensions, domestic political uncertainty, excessive rainfall, and the return of scheduled power cuts as key drivers of negative sentiment. Global tariff developments and local political uncertainty because of the VAT saga and open disagreements within the government likely weighed on sentiment, Absa said. World Bank prices rise for the third month. The FAO Food Price Index rose 1.0% to 128.3 points in April 2025, marking the third consecutive monthly increase driven by higher prices for cereals, dairy and meat. Cereal prices climbed 1.2% with gains across all major types including wheat and maize. Dairy prices rose 2.4% led by a third straight monthly surge in butter prices, which reached a new all-time high. Meat prices saw the largest jump, up 3.2%, with pig meat, that is pork meat, registering the sharpest rise. In contrast, sugar and vegetable oil prices fell by 3.5% and 2.3% respectively. Iceland unemployment rate at four-month low. Iceland's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate eased to 3.7% in March 2025 from 5.5% in the previous month. Now, this marked the lowest reading since November 2024 as the number of unemployed persons decreased by 4,200 month on month to 8,700. Of this, 4,000 were unemployed men and 4,700 were women. The youth unemployment rate, which measures job seekers between 16 and 24 years old, fell to 12.5% from an upwardly revised 12.9% in February. Meanwhile, total employment rose by 7,000 from a month earlier to 226,900 in March 2025 from a downwardly revised 219,900 in the previous month. The labor force participation rate rose to 81.6% in March 2025 from an upwardly revised 81.1% in the previous month. And now that's what we had for you on economic indicators that are trading this day. Now let's pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. But when we do return, do expect news beyond the borders. You don't want to miss that, so stay tuned.
Zakare riferire mise kunani zencha kuzwa kwa kushimba rifera zalivuka kuya kwa ifasi na rifera fama kepe mvone maikuto amancha a inda ep mikute kulibusi ya mbasa antoye nyetuna mikuwa rifera fama kepe marizo holamina amuvone. Imba enja, nienja farizwe, ikopi ya nifuta ya life la matasa epilini, kukopanya naha, nikuhasa nyari ziramu limu. Zeni, zefu mani hamasfera, sesfa ep ya imba, zetatama elsi, ehangano, oshiherero, omaemriro, Catholic, smani kakarunga, Africans, nizeni zenata. Mwuri zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisfera sa kereke ya nina, si eke zwefa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mwumere imele kwa digital@omalite.com. Muzive ni kufumana imba kachenu, mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually... to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not
something. Kothi shop fundi saka kona we ko shop right kondando onini no kuhubisa kamana gaji ufunda oteo yoko uri mwe sere limwe kombiliga tanona balino senda omirongo wino weika mwe ora kena ishewe okeji ntano dosuka untirigane o marathon kitatu no wei no senda omirongo wino wei adzike iri kosu kumugane gamenu uvo ino parusa kuhubisa ukana kukwe na iwe oinji ko big low price carnival ko shop right akuke ina tumana otovuro kusinda na kamwe komu utemba wiku juma seregari no mirongo mbali landa ita tuiri mesi gatano uvore okusindana pamwe no ShopRite Big Low Price Carnival mesi gatano utali huru moga jeta tugayuni omba wano mauzo ozo zina okuranduroa.
Welcome back. Now you are going to listen to News Beyond the Borders right here on the Reader News Bulletin. Now we start off regionally and we move over to continental news. Thereafter we bring you international news. Starting off in South Africa, where South Africans held a protest over South Africa's joblessness.
KwaZulu-Natal now, South Africa's job crisis has reached boiling point, and today civil society organizations are leading a march in the Durban City Hall or just around it. Protesters are demanding urgent government action to protect employment and revive collapsed industries, while many accuse authorities of failing workers. Our reporter Mlondi Khateb is watching this developing story and joins us now live from the Durban City Hall. And Mlondi, many people braving cloudy and cold conditions there to make their voices heard.
Thank you very much. We are here at the King Dinizulu Park, where the march is going to start to the CPT of Echegini, where they will hand over their memorandum to the city. We'll speak to these young people that are here, that are basically gathering now to try and go through the stall. Thank you very much, ma'am, for your time. If you can just give us your name and your surname.
My name is Jacinta Umangobe Sawazulu.
Jacinta, if you can just briefly tell us the purpose of this march today.
Okay, the purpose is that as South Africans, we felt that it's necessary to remind the government that they are for South Africans, and the people that they are supposed to be focusing on are South Africans. For the longest time, we've sat back and we've watched our government prioritizing people from outside the country, but more than that, we're saying no more to illegal immigrants. We've seen our borders being flooded with people from all over Africa, and the amount of problems that is caused for the country are immense. But it doesn't seem to be affecting people who've got high walls and security. It's affecting the ordinary South Africans like ourselves. And we thought we'd say, we'll do this again, because we did this march before. And we sent our memorandum. We were expecting a response. We didn't get one. So we said, okay, if we're not getting it, we'll go again. And we'll go again and again.
So how are you guys organizing yourselves? Is it an organization or is it just people that are just fed up?
So it's actually people from social media. I think most of them are from Facebook. So it's just us. We just said, like, for the longest time, we've always been sitting on our phones and complaining about things, and we haven't been doing anything about it. So this time, we've changed our strategy. We're standing up for the country. We're standing up for ourselves and our children and our children's future.
So where to from here? They'll be marching from here to the Durban City Hall.
Yes. So we're marching to the Durban City Hall, and we had invited, as we did previously, the SAPS, we've invited Home Affairs, we invited the city, which is for us, it's a Winnie, because we've got other places as well, and then we invited the Office of the Premier. So we wait with bated breath, because we did follow up and ask them and begged everyone to come and receive the memorandum. So we're hoping to find someone there to receive it again, because it's not the first time we're doing it, we're doing it again.
Maybe the biggest point in your memorandum that was submitted last time, what were the biggest points that you, your demands?
The biggest demands that we have is, one, putting South Africans first. Second to that, creating employment that prioritizes South Africans. I mean, in a country that's got so much unemployment, you need to put South Africans first. We wanted the decrease of crime, which is caused by a lot of illegal immigrants, prioritizing taking back our buildings, which have been hijacked. We also asked that people from departments be taken to book for all the criminal activities that we've heard going on. We also want our president to actually say something about the state of the country, because we haven't heard anything from the president about South Africa. And honestly, it's causing a lot of us to wonder if he really wants to be the president of South Africa, because you can't just ignore every single issue. There's 20 children that died because of tuck shops, but who have you heard being arrested? You can't put money onto everything. Some things need a proper working solution.
Meanwhile, energy transition, electricity and energy minister of South Africa says energy transition by focus on jobs development.
Electricity and Energy Minister Jose Hentso Ramokgopa says G20 nations contribute to 85% of the world's GDP and nearly 80% of global emissions.
The G20 cannot afford to be a forum of inertia or entropy. It must be a platform of leadership. Leadership that shows itself in how we design financial instruments that do not punish the poor. Leadership in how we deploy technology as a public good.
Ramokgopa referred to the current state of geopolitics, saying the world is becoming increasingly polarized. He says conflict has disrupted energy supply chains and heightened volatility. He has encouraged G20 nations to not allow international conflict to spill over to affect what they need to achieve.
Rather, let this forum be one of alignment, where we reaffirm that climate ambition and energy access are not contradictory. They are complementary. We do not have the luxury of viewing energy security and energy transition as competing priorities. They are two sides of the same coin. One cannot be achieved without the other.
He has called for the rewards of the energy transition to not only benefit a few.
It must prioritize reskilling, protect livelihoods, and anchor new industries that generate quality jobs. The transition must not extract from the many to enrich the few, but expand opportunity in a way that reflects the spirit of solidarity, the principles of equality, and the commitments to sustainability that define our G20 presidency.
Ramokgopa says energy is at the heart of the changes happening globally. He has reminded delegates that decarbonization must be done responsibly and that the energy transition must be a development project. Abri Babia, SABC News, Cape Town.
Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema has donated 595 high blood pressure testing machines.
Over the past weeks, dedicated professionals from across Southern Province have engaged in rigorous training aimed at integrating health education into school systems. The training organized by Health Learners has seen 500 school health participants graduating.
The school health program helps children to stay healthy, it helps the children to stay in class, and it helps them reach their full potential. These teachers that have been trained can manage mild cases that our students present with, and they can quickly identify and refer serious cases and conditions to the nearby health facilities.
And government is equally committed towards the health and well-being of every learner across the country.
On the 8th of March 2025, the head of state endorsed the school health program in Kasama, Northern Province. This high-level endorsement by the head of state is a testament to the government's commitment towards the health and well-being of every learner across this great nation.
During the graduation, a donation of over 595 blood pressure machines was made on behalf of President Hakainde Hichilema to support the program.
On behalf of the President, I extend heartfelt thanks for your service. His donation of 595 BP machines, which we will be handing over today, comes with 595 glucose monitoring machines, which reflects his commitment, equipping you with the tools that you will need to deliver quality care.
Peggy Gutinyu, Zanisi Nchoma District, Southern Province.
Meanwhile, in Uganda, Uganda's tourism sector sees a revenue surge of $1.3 billion.
Uganda's tourism is roaring back to life. More visitors are coming in to experience Uganda's wildlife attractions. The Wildlife Agency says conservation efforts have seen a rise in animal populations, making chances higher for tourists to see them.
You don't want a tourist to look for a gorilla as if he's looking for medicine. You get me? Tourists should come, do gorilla tracking, 1 kilometer. They interact with the gorilla group for 1 hour and go when they're happy. You don't want to spend a whole day looking for a gorilla. So as we do all this to ensure that we protect these gorillas, to ensure that the population grows, we also want to enhance the tourism experience.
However, the growth in animal numbers could also lead to disease outbreaks because of more interactions with people. Conservationists are worried about the spread of viral infections to animals, which could threaten to bring down the sector.
Threats of disease outbreaks, because we know that these can actually wipe out these gorillas in just minutes or weeks. So we are paying very close attention to this. And as WWF, we are now rolling out, in addition to conservation, we are rolling out programs that consider the One Health approach. One Health ensures that, first of all, the communities around this Bwindi are doing well health-wise, because we know that any interaction can pass on the diseases.
The tourism trends and statistics report shows growth in 2024 was largely driven by visitors from African countries. There was also a 7.7% rise in international tourist arrivals, 1.4 million up from 1.3 million visitors in 2023. The United States, India, and China remain Uganda's leading overseas markets. Safari operators say the country needs to diversify its markets for better results.
We need to be able to tell the world that Uganda is actually beautiful. We need to be able to engage more resources in marketing. We've just been having a debate this morning about a country like Kenya, having Mombasa with over 8 charter companies that fly tourists into Mombasa weekly basis, and we don't have any.
Tourism remains one of Uganda's top revenue earners. In 2024, the sector contributed 6.6% to gross domestic products. The government is now looking more into investment in culture and ecotourism to boost revenues. Isabel Nakiria, CGTN Kampala, Uganda.
Meanwhile, DRC Congo asked its Senate to lift ex-president Kabila's immunity.
After suspending Kabila's political party and raiding his properties, the DRC government, through the Justice Ministry, now wants Kabila's parliamentary immunity lifted in order to proceed with his prosecution. Kabila currently holds the title of Senator for Life, which affords him immunity from prosecution.
Nous attendons donc du Sénat.
We therefore expect the Senate to simply lift the immunity of Senator for Life, Joseph Kabila Kabange, and authorize the prosecution to allow the courts to investigate the case seriously and have it brought before the High Military Court.
The government says it has gathered enough evidence linking Kabila to war crimes, crimes against humanity, and the killing of soldiers and civilians currently being perpetrated in the eastern part of the country.
L'effet pour lequel il est poursuivi.
The acts for which he is being prosecuted were not committed by him during the exercise of his functions while he was president of the republic, or outside the exercise of his functions during that period, but as a life senator.
Mutamba says Kabila's case will be heard by a military court and has called on the former leader to present his defense and face justice in the country. Kabila left the DRC before the last presidential election in 2023, but in early April, he said he would return at an unspecified date, saying the country was in peril. The government says Kabila and his party have maintained an ambiguous attitude regarding the M23 rebellion, which it says they have never condemned. Kabila and his party deny supporting the rebels, calling the allegations rumors designed to hide the failure of the current regime in dealing with the M23. Caroline B., CGTN.
Meanwhile, Egypt has Egypt boosts Gulf ties with over $25 billion US dollar in investment.
April has been a good month for the economy, as a tour by Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to the Gulf region kick-started an influx of hard currency. Qatar inked $7.5 billion of investments. Saudi Arabia pledged $15 billion, while the latest Kuwait has unveiled plans to turn $4 billion of deposits in Egypt's central bank into projects.
Egypt is a real and huge consumer market with over 100 million consumers. The Gulf countries are smaller, limited markets, though their purchase power is big, but not as big as Egypt. There are many opportunities for these companies to make a lot of profit here.
They follow the footsteps of neighbor United Arab Emirates, which last year pumped $35 billion to build Ras Al Hikma City along Egypt's north coast. The new investments are in a variety of industries, the majority in real estate and tourism sectors, as well as renewable energy, petrochemicals, automobiles, and manufacturing.
These funds are crucial. Any foreign currency inflow would strengthen the Egyptian pound, would allow the import of essential goods, would revitalize the economy, create jobs, push growth rates up, and reduce debt levels.
But these contracts were not put into effect except after Egypt's government established a joint committee to tackle red tape and bureaucracy.
The government has taken steps to solve outstanding issues for Kuwait and other investors in Egypt. We also drafted regulations that will ease doing business to attract more FDIs.
Al-Qadi, who partners several Gulf companies in Egypt, has commended these procedures.
The Egyptian president himself ordered to waive all licenses and project establishing fees for investors. The government is applying the golden license, which cuts down all red tape, and is also offering tax exemptions. These incentives are attractive, but not enough. The joint committee will study more procedures to improve the business climate.
The latest financing has placed the Arab Gulf states on the top of the FDI list for the North African country.
But this might not be the end of it. More Gulf Arab countries, including Bahrain, are in talks to chip in with investments of their own before the end of the year. Yes, Hakim for CGTN, Cairo, Egypt.
Meanwhile, media stakeholders in Kenya call for press freedom as world commemorate World Press Freedom Day.
Need to update you. Now, as Kenya prepares to join the world in marking World Press Freedom Day, the government has been urged to ensure that media freedom is guaranteed. Speaking a day before the celebrations, stakeholders in the industry say journalists have been harassed in the recent times.
Been a tough year, not just because of the loss of life, but because the space for press freedom continues to shrink, even as the need for accurate, ethical, and fearless journalism grows. We gather here today under the theme, The Impact of Artificial Intelligence on the Media and Press Freedom, a topic that sits at the very heart of journalism's future. AI holds enormous promise. It can strengthen investigative journalism, accelerate fact-checking, and improve access to information. In Kenya, some newsrooms are already experimenting with AI to summarize reports, analyze data, and personalize news content. These innovations are necessary and exciting, especially for media houses facing shrinking revenues, rising costs, and demanding audiences. But AI is not neutral. It is built and deployed by humans, with all our biases, blind spots, and ambitions. And when it falls into the wrong hands or remains unregulated, it becomes a weapon. In the past year, we've seen Kenyan journalists do their job under extraordinary threats. During the Gen Z-led protest last year, over 20 journalists were assaulted. Several were detained, others had their equipment destroyed, and one was even abducted. Some of us in this room had our phone numbers published online, exposing us and our families to targeted harassment. Female journalists, in particular, continue to bear the brunt of online gender-based violence with little to no recourse. I've received reports this morning of a journalist who was abducted yesterday in Kitui, and I hope, spokesperson sir, you will help us follow up on this matter. Let's be clear, AI can make this worse. Through deepfakes, AI-generated smear campaigns, surveillance, and targeted disinformation. We are entering a world where the truth itself is at risk of being manufactured or erased. In recent days, there have been growing calls to control digital spaces, some driven by concerns about misinformation, hate speech, and harmful content. But we must tread carefully. Kenya already has existing laws, such as the Computer Misuse and Cybercrimes Act, which, if properly and fairly enforced, provide a legal framework to address many of these.
That is the president of the Kenya Editors Guild.
Now still in Kenya. Kenyan lawmaker has been shot dead in apparent association in Nairobi.
Kenya is reeling after the fatal shooting of opposition MP Charles Ogunduwiri in what police have described as a targeted and premeditated attack in Nairobi on Wednesday night. According to police, Wiri was in his vehicle with his driver and bodyguard when a motorcycle taxi pulled up beside them at a roundabout and fatally shot the legislator before fleeing the scene.
We were with him today in Parliament, as she said, the whole afternoon, and he left, I think, barely 30 minutes before he met his death. So we would like to ask the police to investigate this matter thoroughly and share with Kenyans as fast as possible what happened to our colleague, Honorable Ogunduwiri.
Internal Security Principal Secretary also confirmed that investigations are ongoing, while President William Ruto called for a swift and transparent probe, insisting that those responsible must be held to
what
account.
We have a preliminary report of what transpired, but investigations are ongoing to establish what actually happened. Yeah.
The killing comes months after a political truce was signed between Ruto and Odinga in March, following a tense period of anti-government protests in 2023.
Uganda, on the other hand, has begun production of organic fertilizers for regional and global markets.
Organic New Earth is a game changer for the farming industry. You see, fertilizers are actually oil-based products. Organic New Earth is totally organic. What we do is that the organic new earth feeds the soil. The soil then feeds the plant as God intended it to be. So this is a pure organic treatment that will take our plants, make them truly organic. And there is nothing like it right now in Uganda, actually in Africa. And Uganda is going to be blessed because you guys are going to be the flagship of bringing true organic farming into this world.
So we started this, and the journey has been long, and I thank God that for the first time this product is being manufactured in the African continent for the first time. But what does this give you as a country? When you go to the US, they are looking for pineapples. The pineapples they get, they are so sour. I don't even know why they call them pineapples. And the cost is about equivalent of Uganda shillings, 20 to 30,000. Akatunda. Passion. One. Passion fruit. $5. $5 to $10. One. And it's coming from Australia. Sweet potatoes. They're not even nice, like the ones of ours here. They come from Japan. And the cost of one avocado, because of a single avocado, 20,000 shillings avocado. So I went to the store and I said, I want to supply you. They said, how many tons can you supply per day? They talk in terms of tons.
Fragile foundations, a policy divide and undermine US-Africa trade.
Let's start with a bit of context, right, on where trade flows between the United States and economies here in Africa are in comparison with trade flows with China and the European Union. So that's our starting point here. Two-way trade between African economies and the United States was just under $72 billion last year. Now compare that to $295 billion in two-way trade between China and economies here and over $400 billion in Africa-EU trade. But there's a key caveat when looking at these specific numbers. Services trade doesn't really factor into this US figure, and it's a lot more widespread than you might imagine. I mean, think about this, for example. You're probably watching this program on a device that's running Android or iOS systems, all of which are provided by American companies. Now, trade flow in goods, comparatively, is smaller, but for a lot of countries across the continent, it's relatively balanced. As economists at Renaissance Capital, in fact, pointed out in late March, the United States is running relatively large surpluses with Egypt and Ethiopia, but it has comparatively large deficits with the likes of Angola and Nigeria. In fact, at nearly $9 billion in 2024, the biggest deficit was with South Africa. A key thing to note is that all of these big deficits, the one thing they have in common, all of these are commodity exporters. And that's why, for example, South African platinum, chrome, manganese were exempt from Trump's draconian tariffs announced in early April. The total trade number also glosses over another factor. Countries' exposure to the United States varies quite a bit. So, for example, in 2023, there are only four economies that had over 10% of their total exports going into the American market, and that's Ethiopia, Kenya, Mauritius, and Lesotho. In fact, in Lesotho's case, 21% of its exports went to the United States. And that sort of concentration risk tells you why that 50% tariff would be incredibly damaging to the tiny, landlocked Southern African country. So what exactly would happen if tariffs are put in place? There's a sort of natural experiment to see the impact that would have. Look no further than Ethiopia. Losing AGOA access privileges effectively is imposing a tariff, and the US did terminate AGOA access to Ethiopia in 2022. 18 foreign companies, and that includes PVH, that's the parent company of brands like Tommy Hilfiger, they left the country. 20 others stopped production. Nearly 12,000 jobs were lost as a result. And there are other considerations to keep in mind too. Even if, for the sake of argument, the tariffs are rolled back and AGOA access continues, it could potentially clash with the industrialization ambitions of African economies. And we have seen this before. In 2018, the United States threatened to cut AGOA access to four East African countries, Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda, and Tanzania. Why? Because those four collectively wanted to stop the importation of used clothing. Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, they all folded. They continued their used clothing imports. Rwanda, however, they held their ground and phased out the importation of used clothing. But consequently, in his first term, Donald Trump ended duty-free access for apparel made in Rwanda. As a result, exports to the United States fell by half between 2018 and 2024, but apparel exports specifically evaporated. That declined from $3 million in 2018 to just over $10,000 the following year.
Now, Apple braces for a tariff impact and dreams a buyback.
Apple is battening down the hatches as it faces US President Donald Trump's trade war. On Thursday, CEO Tim Cook said in an earnings call, tariffs are expected to cost an extra $900 million this quarter. The company is trying to shift its huge supply chain, and Cook warned that efforts to spend more in the US will mean real costs hitting Apple's balance sheet. The Cupertino-based tech giant plans to spend $500 billion over the next 4 years to expand its US footprint. Cook said the company already sources 19 billion chips from a dozen US states and will be expanding its own facilities. He also said Apple is building a stockpile of products, saying, for example, most of the iPhones sold in the US this quarter will come from India, not China, and that most iPads, Macs, and Apple Watches to be sold in the US will come from Vietnam, while China will continue to produce most of the Apple products for markets outside the US. And on Thursday, in the face of trade war costs, Apple says it trimmed about $10 billion from its share buyback program. Analysts say the moves show Apple, one of the most profitable companies in the history of business, is hoarding cash as it moves into uncharted waters. For now, the trade war has not been a problem for Apple's sales. Its latest results were better than expected by Wall Street at some $95 billion. However, executives say they expect April, May, and June to only show Apple's revenue grow in the low to mid single digits.
Meanwhile, China says it's evaluating possible trade talks with the U.S.
And we're standing by for the release of the April jobs report next hour, so we'll bring you that when it comes. But the report will give us some important clues about where the U.S. economy is headed, as economic alarm bells have been sounding, recession odds have been climbing, and frustration in many camps has been building around Trump's economic policies, including his trade war with China specifically. But breaking overnight, a slight tone shift from Beijing. China says it is currently assessing proposals by the United States to begin trade talks, and U.S. futures are higher this morning on that news. CNN's Mark Stewart joins us now from Beijing. So, Mark, what else are you hearing at this point? I believe we have, there you are. Mark, what else are you hearing this morning on this front?
Hi, Omar. Good to see you. Let me just start by giving you the viewpoint from where I stand in China. This is very much being seen as a move by the United States, messaging from the United States to Beijing to perhaps take things a step further, to perhaps initiate talks. Right now, the messages have been received, the envelopes, the emails have been opened, and that's where we stand. China is going to evaluate where it goes next. In fact, if we look at the statement from the government that came at 8 o'clock this morning, the exact phrasing is China is currently evaluating this. The timing of this is very interesting because this statement released during a holiday, a two-day holiday here in China, that perhaps suggests that it may have something to say. It could have perhaps waited until next week to make this kind of very visible remark. At the same time, let's be clear, China does not want to appear that it's taking orders or actions from the United States. It does not want to be seen as the nation that caves in to the United States. In fact, over the last few days, we have seen a lot of attention on social media, a lot of propaganda, very pro-nationalist themes by the Chinese government, saying that it will not kneel down. Another phrase we've heard is that bullies are paper tigers. It wants to stand defiant, and it is sending a message, especially to people here in China, that it's here for the long game. Nonetheless, this is a bit of a break from this stalemate that we have seen, and markets are reacting. You mentioned the U.S. futures. Today here in Asia, all of the major indexes closed in the green. They all had gains. That includes South Korea, Japan, of course, the Hang Seng in Hong Kong, which is seen as a benchmark index. Omar, I think it goes without saying, when there is financial tension, trade tension between the world's largest and second largest economies, it creates a lot of unease. Perhaps this is a small step forward.
Mark Stewart, a lot to keep an eye on here. But as we know, sometimes progress in these arenas goes very gradually. And if the posturing from China holds up, this will be a gradual process. Mark Stewart, really appreciate it.
Words of those potential trade talks between the U.S. and China comes as a massive tariff on millions of American purchases is now in effect. The de minimis exemption, as it's known, allowed goods worth under $800 to come into the U.S. duty-free, and it reshaped the way Americans shopped. The loophole allowed ultra-low-cost Chinese commerce sites like Shein and Temu to send everything from yarn to patio furniture to U.S. homes. But with the loophole expired, those items will face tariffs of up to 145%. For more on this, I want to bring in Ryan Young, who joins us from Chicago. He's a senior economist with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Really appreciate you making the time early this morning for us here. So we'll get to the tariff deadline passing in a second, but just on the latest news, what do you make of China potentially opening the door to trade talks? I mean, to this point, Beijing's been saying essentially it won't be pushed around by the U.S. So could this development be considered a win for President Trump?
I doubt it. China's getting leveraged by the day, and we're going to see more evidence of that next week. The last ships to depart China that would not be subject to the 145% tariffs have already left, and next week is when they're going to start arriving at U.S. ports, first on the West Coast, then in the Gulf of Mexico and on the East Coast. And when those ports are seeing a fifth to a third less traffic than they were just a year ago, that's going to cause serious problems. UPS has already announced layoffs. Consumers are going to face shortages and higher prices. Most of what we import is actually intermediate goods that U.S. businesses use to make their products here in the U.S. So everyone is going to be feeling the pinch. And the more that happens and the longer that drags on, the less leverage that President Trump is going to have.
Right. Okay. So you're saying for U.S. consumers, they will see prices go up basically starting in a week or so. I mean, businesses will now have to make a tough decision as well, right? Sell products from China at more than double their previous prices or just stop selling them altogether. So what?
And now that has brought us to the conclusion of today's news bulletin on the Reading News Bulletin. Stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program with David Shombe alongside Benedict Simon. And with that being said, also Helmut, look out for him at 16:30 for the Home Run Show. Now for me and Dafa, happy as usual, it is goodbye. Do stay tuned if you would want to hear my voice again on Saturday for Life Lessons at 1900 hours up to 2100 hours. Goodbye.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077. Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users